It's Wednesday, February 1st, 2012, and you're listening to episode 256 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes.
Hello and welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is not Dan.
This is Carla.
This is Wayne.
This is John.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing, Chris?
It feels good to be back around the mics again.
You know,
it's been a long time.
It does. It's been, I think it has actually been a month since we have
been 5 weeks.
It's been, so 5 weeks since we've actually sat around the mics. And unfortunately, Dan has been called out. He is working at the moment as we speak.
Yes,
fortunately,
he actually
did go out to dinner with us for a little brief respite, but the phone rang as soon as we walked back in the house. So you're all stuck with me tonight instead. Oh, yay, you.
Yay, anything to get you to talk, Pat.
I think Dan just enjoyed the break so much, he just had to take one
I can't wait to see the responses on the forum about this. God damn that, Pat.
Pat sucks.
Oh, my God.
And eventually someone other than me and John will post about it.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be back, like you said. Welcome back to everybody, and hopefully next week you will have those soothing, dulcet tones of the sexy bedroom voice, Dan. But for now, you're just going to have to rough it.
You know what we're
going
to have this week? On Friday, I'm planning on posting my first game for Fear the Con. A Bard's Bard, the Bardening. A Pathfinder game where all the characters are bards, including the GM, because the concept of the game is that the GM is a bard telling the story of bardic epicness that these bards had barded.
Wow.
And I'm going to give a chip to everyone at the table.
I think that you should speak in Bard, just like Smurf.
I want to die.
You know, Smurf, Bard should become a noun, an adjective, an adverb.
In real life. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, I can do that.
Or just sing the whole time.
But I think the coolest thing about it for me is that I'm going to give each player a chip. As we go through the game, one time during the game, everyone can throw in their chip, and the person can say, that's not how I heard it. And then change whatever plot point I just dropped. If they rolled a 1 and they wanted it to be a 20 or something, throw down the chip. That's not how I heard that it happened. And then have that input into the game.
I'm going to show up to your game, and in the first minute of play, I'm going to throw my chip out and say, that's not how I heard it happen. We weren't bards. So deal with that. We were a well-balanced adventuring party of fighter, wizard, cleric, thief, rogue, monk, paladin, sorcerer,
ranger.
Barbarian, ranger. Yeah, that's about all we had.
Oh, John.
Yeah.
Oh, John.
Wayne, I think since you have a little bit of lead time on this, I think that you should take the time and all of your box text and everything that you have, all the scripted stuff you have planned out should be in rhyme.
Yeah.
Also,
you know,
druid.
I can prepare some rhyme stuff for it. I hadn't thought of that till you just mentioned it.
Haikus, perhaps?
You should. But I think that you should. If you're gonna bard it up.
My name is Wayne. I'm insane. This game is mundane. I have no brain. I look rather plain.
I have this all thought out. It is going to be an epic bardic epic tale.
I think one of the bards should be a rapper.
No, then you need Chris
That's
Mays.
That's up to the person playing it.
Fitty
hey,
Copper.
You know, it's not all about just the black man being a rapper.
Hey, he would tell you otherwise. Chris, back me up. Not you, Chris.
Chris. You know what? Carla is calling open that can of worms.
Well, wow. I didn't hear it. What back you up with what?
Nothing. Next topic.
Yeah. Damn it. So basically, everyone keep an eye out for EdCon Planner. Want to remind everyone the con is coming up in May. So let's get some more games out there. Let's get everyone else as excited about it as I am.
Yeah, let's pay more admission. I mean, this is called a con for a reason. So open up your checkbooks, please. And also, you know, come to St. Louis.
St. Louis rocks.
I'm going to throw a goblin game or two up on there in the very near future.
At this point, I am signed up for nothing. Got a good number of games out there right now, but they're all full. Because I just sort of missed the boat through the holidays and even before that and whatnot, that I sort of missed out on that. So yes, please, everybody, sign up games so that I can actually have something to play in.
Yeah.
Except Bard the Bardening.
I do plan on adding at least one more event. I know that my Fear the Con attendance is going to be shortened by a day, but I do plan on running at least two events on that Friday.
Yeah.
So one already is full, being my battle.
And I'm already in it. So, neener, neener.
That's right.
I'm assuming we're having the vendor area again. Same vendors.
Yes, as I said, I know that we've already been talking to Casey. They're going to be back. I'm hoping that we'll have Jess. You know, the same vendors, you know, Jess with the Geeky Clean. I hope that you're going to have your booth set up. I thought the vendor area was just phenomenal last year. And in this venue, I haven't seen it yet. That's the other thing we need to do is we need to check it out.
We're setting up an additional walkthrough now for the people that haven't been able to walk through yet. So they'll see what the food area is going to be like. Pat, you'll get a chance to go in and see, and we'll let everyone get up to speed on the changes that'll be coming for this year's kind
of thing. Isn't the area that we sort of thought about for the vendor area, is it a little bit bigger? I haven't seen it. I don't know.
I'm just curious how the layout's going to be, because it used to be a church. This building used to be a church before it became a community center for Maryland Heights. So
it's a big building.
Wow. Yeah, it was kind of a big, it's like a ranch, really spread out.
Is there a dungeon full of bones underneath it that we can LARP in?
Perchance.
Yes.
Well, that would be awesome.
We'll find out. So awesome. Be thinking about Fear the Con 5 coming in May.
Yep. There'll be a link near you.
There'll be a link in the show notes for this episode for our flyer if anyone wants to send it out to local stores, hang it up somewhere, you know,
wipe their
whatever.
Ass with it.
You what
you
they do
you want.
Yeah, what they do with it on their own time, it's their own business. We're just providing it.
Load up a bale of it on a plane and drop it over the great state of Mississippi. Do whatever the hell you want with it.
So the other announcement I have is the Star Wars Guild House Nakash is going strong. We are about a month, I guess, into a little over a month of play. And I know we've got about 10 level 50s in the guild at this point. Almost there myself. I've been slow. But
You've been shotgun poop socking. It's not that you've been slow. It's that you have a lot of characters.
And, I'm sure there are people that have a lot more, but I have four characters that I've been devoting some amount of, dedicated time to. So that's what's stopped me.
Instead of one big, undergarment skiing full calf length poop sock, you have a mantle with a bunch of stockings in it, and your main character is 47 or 48, so that's dad's stocking and it's pretty full of poop. But then you have a couple level 20s, that's Duncan and Connor stocking.
There you go. Okay. But if you guys are interested, Star Wars The Old Republic, we are on the Candorous Ordo server, and it's House Nakash. There's also a forum on the Fear the Boot forums if you're interested. We'd love to have you guys. Come on out and play. Star Wars, lightsabers, what more can you ask for?
A fully realized space dogfighting combat
poop
system.
Okay.
Chris, poop socking is when...
He just woke up. He's cleaning out his ears.
It's supposed to be one of those, regional terms.
Oh, no, it's regional to Norath and Azeroth, yes. But the term came about, as far as I know, in the original EQ days, pre-expansion or maybe just a little bit into Kunark, whereby the world spawns were on semi-random timers. They were in no way instanced. And what the super guilds would do would be have round-the-clock coverage, because they could spawn at 4 p.m. or 8 p.m. or 4 a.m. And the person whose duty it was to monitor whether the dragon spawned or whatever the hell it was. I think they're Quillmane was the Pegasus or something. There was one that they all wanted to kill that was a super rare world spawn. When it was your duty to stand watch, you could not leave. If you left for 5 minutes and it spawned, another guild got it, and that was the end of you and all your DKP and all your sweet rare epic items. So you pooped in a sock. You sat at your computer chair until you suffered a stroke or you just died. And you had a poop sock.
Wow.
I've never heard this phrase before. I haven't either.
This is honest to God, this is fascinating. This really is. Is there like a dew piss or something that you'd piss in the Mountain Dew bottle or something?
I think most players allowed themselves to get up and pee. I mean, the truly devoted probably had a catheter or something. But I have heard, and this could all be internet rumor bullshit, but
I really hope it is. I don't want to think that people like that. 1999
was a really wild time. I think this is fantastic. In the history of the MMO, and I would not be at all surprised if some of my compatriots in their middle teens in those years who were popping a squat for a super nice level 50 helmet or whatever the hell pooped in a sock so as to remain vigilant against their opposing raid guild. The animosity between the raid guilds on these PvE, everybody cooperates servers was far more bitter and evil than anything that you see going on between Horde and Alliance or Sith and Empire and Republic.
Dan, I'm sorry. I've already failed as moderator.
That is amazing.
I let this one get away from me.
This is a history lesson.
I'll try to rein it back in now.
No, this is...
I'm mortified, but anyway, yeah. moving on.
I'm all constipated.
Right. So
it's time for a movement.
Before we move on to something else equally horrifying, I was at the grocery store, and I thought, well, I'll swing by the liquor aisle and see if I can find an appropriate beverage for this evening. And I was sort of looking through, and I came across an odd-looking bottle.
It's very pink.
It's an aluminum can, and it's a cider. It's a hard cider, because I have a penchant for hard ciders.
I love hard ciders.
And this just happened to catch my eye. I'm like, well, this looks interesting. I don't know who it is. I'm not going to pimp their name. But
pimp your beer.
It is a...
you got a Five Loko.
Well, I don't know if it's local or what, but anyway,
Five Loko? That's out now? God, those people are like the Gillette razors.
But anyway, so this
is one more level of Loko.
There was one that was an apple cider, but then the one right next to it, same company, just different one. It is a peach hard cider. And I thought, I am going to try that. I'm going to shell out the $5 for this aluminum can of peach cider, and I'm going to try it and see what it's like. So without further ado, I have poured it into the Baron Von Badass mug that I'm borrowing from Dan, and I am going to try it and let you know how it is.
Wayne, I'll bet you $5 he hates it.
It smells very good, actually.
I don't know. It's a cider. He likes ciders.
Oh, it's too late. He's already tasting it.
I'm telling you, it's his poop mug.
Well, he's swishing around. Do you need a cracker?
Oh, this is ambiguity here. There's a second sip.
Has it breathed?
There's a lot of lip smacking.
It's very good.
It's very tasty. Wayne, you just got yourself $5 with your bardic indecision.
I like peach flavor. I like peach iced tea and stuff like that. It's kind of like a hard version of a peach iced tea. It's very tasty, actually. I will be consuming this again.
You know what you should run it for the con, John?
What?
Chad the Chadney.
No.
Everyone plays Chad.
No.
It could be a different personality trait of Chad.
I am going to share this, though, because I happen to be reading the bottle, and this actually disturbs me a little bit. There's a thought bubble on here sort of describing things. Cartoon art on the thing. It's very odd, but it reads this. Fed peaches to his chickens once. Got fuzzy eggs. Thought it was a novelty. Became a millionaire overnight. I don't know what the hell this has to do with peach cider. But anyway...
It does not make me want to try it.
No, it doesn't. It's a good thing I didn't read it before I bought it.
Fuzzy eggs. Mm.
Yeah.
And it does. It has
my
a fuzzy
boy
egg.
Pat says he can eat 50 fuzzy eggs.
Moving on. Our first topic for tonight is about picking up a campaign after a break.
This is a very appropriate topic.
Chris, I didn't say you could speak.
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. Go ahead.
No. I was just merely commenting on the fact of the appropriateness of the topic, seeing as how we're back on the mics.
Yeah. And not only are we coming back from a podcast break, I believe both our Battletech game and your campaign have either just come back from a break of several weeks or are about to. Is that correct, Chris?
And Carla's Star Trek game.
Carla? Oh, also?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Carla, they allow you to play games?
Oh, well, you know,
I thought your game was just kind of fading into the nether for kid death.
It is.
Went into the neutral zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it is in a... Oh, hello, kitty. Oh, hello, kitty.
Mm-hmm. We thought the game was diving.
I played that this weekend. Yeah, anyway.
Complete with sound effects.
You're gross. But anyway, yes, we're all coming back from breaks.
Go ahead, but Carly, you were talking about yours, so go ahead and
start. I was just commenting on John's comment. It hasn't really died because of kids. It's been mainly just time. You know, no one's got the time. And what, like we talked about in a previous...
Why don't they have free time, Carla?
Well, 50% yes, because they have kids. But okay. Like we talked about on a prior episode, it was more, it's just the priorities, which we talked about. You guys, gaming is like your social thing you want to do. But for us, it's like, well, we've got church functions or friend functions or work or whatever. And that's
Definitely need to be able to stake a claim and psychopathically defend the time that gaming occupies.
Right. So we're trying right now to start it up again. But we're going to reboot the campaign. We're going to reroll characters. And we've already talked about those awesome, epic ending to the game that's just going to merge into the next reboot where we reroll new characters and go from there. And so I think I'm really excited about it because I'll get, you know, an opportunity to play a different character because I wasn't a huge fan of my character. It'll give some of the other people an opportunity to switch and do something more that interests them because there's a couple characters that you could just tell they just didn't want to do what they were doing. Mm. So it's good. but we're running into the timing thing. I think there's been like a 30 email chain. Let's go this weekend. Well, no, we're out this weekend and then this one. And, you know, Dan and I are going on vacation at the end of March. So do you start it now or wait till we come back? So it's this whole.
So your solution is a reboot. Could you describe exactly what a reboot is in terms of tabletop games? Just make new characters in the same setting. And are you tying it into the events of the first campaign or did it never happen?
Yeah, we're trying to tie it into the first campaign. So it's still going to set in the Star Trek universe. We thought we'd be a little bit different because most people who know me know I'm a huge fan of the Next Generation era.
Yes.
And we're doing original series and most people have been watching the Next Gen. So everyone kind of wants to get into that era just because we see it so much. So Dan said he'd be willing to do that, but we were going to like destroy your ship in some big epic battle and then we were going to maybe fast forward through some time and it would be like in the history books what our group did and then we'd have, you know, we would reroll new characters for new.
Okay.
I actually really like that as an idea. Cool. I think that is a good way to sort of come back, not only from a break, but it's a way to come back from if you've lost some interest in what you're playing. Like you said,
right.
You know, some people, they just don't really like their character. They've kind of grown bored with it, but they still like the overall setting.
Yeah.
You know, a time shift can
I think the first thing to do is just take stock of how much interest is still in the campaign and the characters.
Well, there's a lot of interest in the campaign for sure.
Exactly. It's in this case, you've got a lot of interest in the campaign, but not as much in the individual characters. So this is a perfect solution.
An interesting distinction.
Well, and Dan is, in this case, he's written episodic games, but he's also written an overarching story that, you know, it's kind of like in a lot of the Next Gen where Q comes in a bunch of times, there's this overarching plot. Mm-hmm. And so he's written it that way. So I think the overarching plot will remain in place, but we'll have new, quote unquote, episodes.
Yeah, that's how Dan structures things. He's doing Battletech exactly
okay,
the same way.
Yeah, so it's...
To kind of pile on to what Wayne and Pat were saying, I think that it also helps to generate more interest for what's come after, because in a certain sense, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think as you leave what you're currently doing or have left what you're currently doing, you have your impressions of it, whether they're good or bad. But once you start in with this new stuff and you create a good ending to the original one, you're going to end up leaving and looking back at it with fairly decent memories and recollections, which I think also makes for a little bit more excitement when it comes to the new thing and can help to, you know, keep that interest strong.
Sure. Yeah, one of the characters wasn't very, I guess, knowledgeable in Star Trek and was thrust into the captain position. And you can just tell he's overwhelmed and he doesn't know. And we're still, you know, we're not like you guys in that we can just jump right into the role playing and it's still kind of awkward for us. And so you just don't get really interesting games when people
are awkward at first. And then you go online and you really read how to do it and you get a little more experience and you get good at it. And then you can't stop.
Well, not everybody gets good at it.
I think the most I've ever role played, because I haven't done it a lot, was in Chad's Inception game in Fear the Con last year. And that I had a ton of fun with that.
He has a lot of success with that game. They're always terrified over at that table.
It was so easy to just get into the character. It was the most I ever role played. And it's harder with this group. But I think if I was with the right group of people, it'd be much easier. So
yeah, there's definitely a cascade effect whereby like, two people that are really flustered and embarrassed by the process form a power block and start sucking away the energy. Whereas if everyone's into it, then, you know,
we're
all
peeing
at the same trough and or we're all trucks in the same convoy, maybe a more appropriate analogy. Everything is going easier because everyone else is on board.
You know, at the risk of inflating his ego, but he won't listen to this anyway unless we tell him.
No, he's control effing it, inflating his ego right now. So go ahead.
The one thing that I think Chad does better than probably anybody that I've played a game under when he was GMing is he gets people into characters and gets them role-playing. That is one of his skills as a GM. Every game I've ever seen him run, he does an excellent job of getting the people in character and going.
Yeah, I'll give him that. That's true. His campaigns tend to be very explosive with player activity.
What are some of the pitfalls or hardships to coming back to a campaign after a break?
With mine, you know, when we left off, our break was caused basically by the holidays and some extended vacation by one of our players. So, you know, it was kind of a forced 2-month hiatus. And we were lucky in the sense that the ending point was good because it essentially was the end of like the second act of the campaign, is if you were to break it out into that. It had a very good ending and it gave us an opportunity for the pickup point to be almost where we could just kind of really start up and we weren't like in the middle of an action. The adventure that they were on was over. They had gotten to a place where there was a bunch of little resolutions for things and their next point where they were going to go and start on the last, you know, half of this this whole thing. And so I was kind of faced with the problem, I guess, with the situation where, you know, I wanted to certainly get them back into the action to remind them of what they're doing and everything. But yet at the same time, I knew that, you know, if I'm sitting down with these guys 2 months after we've last done stuff, you know, there's going to be a predominance of tangents, you know, more than usual because we're finally all back around together at the table. And for them to get back into their characters and for us to focus on what was going on, that was going to be a little bit more difficult. And so I resisted that temptation to throw them heavily back in the action and really kind of took it from the approach of easing them into everything. You know, of course, we had to do all the recaps so everybody knew what everybody had. And then I just kind of made things very, very slow. The pace of this first session back was very slow. And I kind of kept it that way on purpose so that we could all kind of get back into it and make it much easier for the sessions going forward. I think under normal circumstances, I wouldn't have ran this session this way. But looking at it from that sense of trying to ease back into things, I think this was probably a good avenue or a good way to do it just because of the fact of problems I think that we're going to be facing. And I think it could have caused more damage to the campaign had we jumped right back into the
thing. Oh, how did your players react to that, Chris? Do you think that came off sort of the way you were hoping, that that easing back in was a good way to sort of get reacquainted with the characters?
It really did, I think, and I think that they responded really well to it. And in fact, there was a small degree of silliness going on there that involved, I mean, they realized they needed to get a wagon because they're going to be taking this long overland journey. And it became this tangent in the game where they kind of went nuts on the wagon, and we really role-played out the negotiating to purchase the wagon and all this other stuff that they wanted to get for it, where normally that would have been something that we just would have killed it. But it was good in this sense because it kind of just was, it was a nice, fun reintroduction. And then they responded really well. And I think everybody, it was actually kind of nice because of the lack of heavy action going on. Some pretty good role playing and one liners and things that were all in character came out from everybody, which was really nice. And I think it gave them a very good handle to grasp to get back into those.
Yeah, you heard the barding, everyone is off the wagon.
You know, you hit on something, though, Chris, that we've seen a lot. If we have a lot of weeks off in a row, when we sit back down at the table, we tend to be the same way. This is a social, mm-hmm. you know, exercise instead. I think, you know, maybe going out to dinner first might be a good idea. But in our...
Setting the mood a little bit.
Set the mood a little bit for the game. Get to know each other. Get it out of the way.
Candles are always good.
Yeah.
But what we've done this time is actually something some people might say is a trap. We've started...
The Battle of Endor.
It's a trap.
Oh, okay. Wayne has an Admiral Akbar figure that I wasn't paying attention to.
Yes. And I was Wayne. Holding it up. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. So anyway,
great podcast.
We started it's for them. It's
I'm just teasing you.
So what we've done is we started a backup game because in our case, it was just, you know, Dan couldn't make it for work reasons. We've all still been getting together and gaming. We have this whole backup Pathfinder game going. So if Dan can't run or if Dan doesn't feel like running, we have characters we can pull out and play. That potentially could be a trap in the wrong group because you may get more interested in the new campaign,
right.
Might kill the old.
Get to
in
it.
Our case, though, it's kept us all interacting with each other. It'll keep that we haven't been together feeling from happening. And every week when we go over to game, we see all of our mechs sitting on the table. We see the sheets and we think, man, I want to be playing that again.
There is no trace of the new shiny.
Yeah.
With this. And maybe that means that we're not really into it as much, but
I don't think that's the case.
Don't think so, but
I think we want to get back to battle.
I think you have to have a mindset of, because yes, the new shiny is the enemy of any campaign, right. Obviously. We've talked about this many times before on
Well,
on
and I've got to say, I'm really into our Pathfinder game, but we created it with the mindset of this is our backup go-to game.
Yes.
If we can't game, we're going to game this. So we started doing it modularly. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't going to have a big overarching campaign that, you know, from session to session, we'd have to remember what happened last time.
And each one
should be an episode.
And, you know, another reason that we sort of started this too, well, along with it, is, you know, it happens to be that this is because basically that Dan is not able to run. But the sort of the mindset of this is just that if we have a session where one or two people are not going to be able to make it, we'll play the backup game as opposed to just canceling the session. And I think this can be a good practice for any gaming group if, you know, if you're able to do that, because one of the hard parts about gaming is that if you start missing a bunch of weeks and you just literally don't game at all, then it can really fall off the radar, and it can be it can be a group killer.
I was just going to ask you guys what your opinion is. How long do you think you can go before a game bites the dust? Like, just in your opinion, how many weeks, months do you think you can miss doing nothing related to that game before?
It depends on the game and the
group. You can have up to 5 different answers on
this.
Well,
and that's why
mine is completely different.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm asking the question.
Absolutely.
I think, Carla, I think it does have a lot to do with the strength of the campaign when you left it. And I think a lot of this responsibility falls, you know, in this particular thing, on the game master and his drive and desire to get it back going. You know, because we're kind of in a similar situation to what you described, Wayne, where we've started picking up doing Dresden Files RPG now. And so that's kind of become our alternate game on weeks where I might not be ready or whatever. And we're running it kind of like an episodic thing. And I know, you know, from past experience that I've got to be careful that I don't face that threat. The enjoyment of that shiny is going to overtake mine. So it's a responsibility for me to make sure that things are still exciting. I'm still moving the campaign along, even when we're not gaming. So whether it's via email or whatever, I've got to keep that interest going, keep my players engaged, you know, so I can still feed off some of that energy. So I think it really does depend. But I think there also, too, and all that said, I feel that there is a threshold that you get to where it becomes almost impossible to pick it up because it's just been too long. You know, if it's been something like 6 months, it's going to be hard for anybody to remember because nobody takes that good.
Yeah, I know one of the last Star Trek games, I think we broke for a couple of months. We met back and we're like, what the heck were we even doing? We had notes, but we're like, well, why did we even do that? Or who was this person you were talking? You know, we had no, and Dan didn't even remember.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot easier an episodic game. If you ended on a cliffhanger, you might as well just forget about that cliffhanger.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely important to have tried to wrap up a lot of the sort of the plot hooks or loose ends or whatever you have had, you know, you had going on if you're going to take an extended hiatus from a game. My personal experiences have been that, you know, when I first started playing, I was in a couple long running campaigns that I have mentioned again, time and time again on the mics. People will remember me saying this, but we took breaks from those games, and we took extended breaks at some points. You know, we'd go anywhere from not playing it for a few weeks to a few months, and we'd play something else in its place, but we could come back and we just didn't have a problem. But again, there were the two things that you mentioned there. It was the desire of the players, I think, first and foremost, to want to come back to that campaign. And second of all, the desire of the GM to play it.
I think there's another factor, too, because you've described those games before. They seem to be, you know, very heavily character-focused versus story. And I think that makes it easier to come back to as well. If the focus is more on the story and everyone's, you know, not as into the characters as they are the story, then it's a lot harder to come back to that story because it's like you're picking up a book in the middle.
Yep.
If it's more focused on the characters, it's a lot easier to pick that character back up. Or if it's a good balance between the two.
Especially if the plot is not episodic.
Yes.
If it's just one tightly wound narrative and you dropped it, or God help you, like you guys said, on a cliffhanger. Mm-hmm. You can't pick that crap back up.
One of the other things I think that is worth trying, at least in a token way, and again, a lot of it depends on the type of delay that you're under. So it's going to vary from group to group, is to kind of keep some communication lines open about, you know, what's going on in the game. Even if it's just to bring it up occasionally, you know, even if you know you're not going to be getting together for a while, but if you happen to see your friends at another setting or whatever, bring it up, talk about it. Keep that, you know, at least somewhere in the top of mind awareness of what's going on. And it can be as simple as an email conversation or a reminder email or whatever. You don't have to get into extensive conversations about it, but, and this is a player and GM responsibility, I think, too, is that as long as you kind of keep talking about it, reminding each other that it's there, it might help to ease that transition a little bit as you go back towards it.
Yeah, I agree. If a game goes completely out of sight, out of mind for any substantial amount of time, it's dead. I think, Pat, you were kind of fishing for a number on that before. I think if you guys don't think about a game for 2 weeks in a row, it dies on the table.
Mm, that seems a good way to put it.
If it's a weekly game, maybe for a less frequent
game. Right, if no one misses it, then clearly it wasn't right worth everyone's time.
Right.
In my case, my mech showed up in the mail this week, so I've been thinking Battletech all week. Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess I have always been used to sort of juggling several games at a time. So I am used to the concept of having two or three or more campaigns active, so to speak.
Yeah, and that is not the usual state for me.
Yeah, and it's not nowadays. It's not for me now. It's not. I'm talking. This is back in my carefree, you know, young, high school and college age. We had all the time in the world.
When you were in that state, I guess, and since you're not that way so much now, Pat, was there ever a sense of overload or dilution of that? So in other words, because you were doing so many, you couldn't get fully invested in one, or were you able to really handle that balance? Because I know that, like, with the online thing that we're trying to start up, Chad kind of made it clear he just didn't really want to get involved more than one at a time. And I'm cool with that. That makes perfect sense to me. But, you know, everyone has their own different threshold level. Are you able to keep a level of investment in your characters? And this is strictly from a player standpoint, I'm asking you.
Tell you, Chris, right now we've got our Battletech game, our backup game. I have a superhero Skype game with the guys from Funny Books. I've got a Star Trek Skype game that we're getting ready to start with some of the other guys from Funny Books and some other guys. I've got Pathfinder Society that is it's going to be a monthly, but it's been weekly for a while, thing I've been playing with Sarah. And every one of those is a different character.
Oh, so Sarah does get to see
you. Actually, it's a big thing. We are gaming together. It is something I'm setting aside time to do with her. So I'll be at least off once a month from the mics just to do that as an activity that we're doing together.
Wayne, but you have become a role-playing whore.
Pretty much. I've been cheating on you guys with other gamers.
Wow.
What's the Star Trek equivalent of a bard?
I don't think there is one.
Oh, well, that must be an awesome game to play.
I don't know, but Worf would not be one.
No.
That's true.
It's not but honorable.
Every one of those is a different character. I always thought, well, I couldn't do two games of the same system. Well, that's not the case because I'm doing Pathfinder Society, our backup game's Pathfinder, and we're going to be doing Pathfinder with you, Chris. And every one of those characters is completely different. I love all three of them, and I have no problem separating them.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, do you ever get them confused? But it sounds like you don't.
I don't think I would ever do same type of character in two places. Like, I wouldn't do, using Pathfinder as the example, because I'm doing three games of that, I wouldn't do two sorcerers at the same time or two rangers, because that would probably throw me.
But you would do two bards at the same time.
No.
You would do a bard very shortly after you had stopped playing your last bard.
Well, yeah, but let's face it. Let's face it. We all know that I had no idea how to build a bard. Had never played D&D. I didn't set out to make a character that was mechanically, you know, useless. Inept.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not the intent. I didn't know what I was doing.
Okay.
I know the system well enough now that I can make the character actually be useful.
I
couldn't do that.
I'm really looking forward, because I think you'll succeed and I think it'll be awesome. I will still bother you every single week or both on the mics about playing a bard.
And so, I will still bring up bards, even though I really don't care that much about them.
Yeah.
Just for the point of poking you.
Yeah. And I'm playing a bard right now in the Pathfinder pickup game, and this is just how it's going.
Well, so how about you, John? How many games do you like to play? Or to answer this question, do you like to play multiple games like this or stick to one?
Well, here's the thing. It's like I was saying earlier about why I'm not playing Star Wars as much as I would have played WoW when it came out, or Star Wars if it would have come out 5 years ago. Gaming on top of a full professional life and a full social life is a new experience for me, and I'm adjusting. So
are you saying social life is not gaming and vice versa?
No.
That gaming is not social?
They run along and on top of one another, but like, if you want to have I am at home on the computer or at somebody's house at this time every day of every week, you have to balance that against, you know, I don't see all my friends and family that much anymore because I work all the damn time. So with that in mind, at this point, I probably don't want to be in any more than one weekly game and perhaps one more smaller game.
Yeah.
So I think our arrangement that Sunday is game day, period. I set aside substantially one out of my 7 days for my game Sabbath. And on top of that, I don't want to do that much more. So we're going to have this Pathfinder game on every other Wednesday or whatever it's going to be. And it's only going to be, you know, 3 or 4 hours, and that'll be fine. But I think that's going to be enough to me.
You know, and I get that completely. And it's the same way. I wouldn't do more regular weekly games. All of my Skype games are every other week, and they're not the same week.
Yeah.
So it's 1 week, then the other game the next week. And both of those are only 2 to 3 hours at night, so it's not like it's the whole thing. Pathfinder Society is a once a week when we get a chance to go, but by the nature of it being, you know, organized play, we can go anytime that they're running it.
And that's much easier to play with. Where I talk about it butting against my social life is not, this is me going and hanging out with my friends. Duh, that's social. What I'm talking about is scheduling.
Right.
Creating a serious barricade around that time and really insisting to work, family, friends, and everyone else that outside of something being on fire, I'm not available during this block.
You know, I will say that I just planned our entire church's fellowship activities for all of 2012. And we usually do them on Sunday, but Dan, he won't go to our church fellowship things on Sundays because he's gaming with you guys. Sure,
And so that's the one thing we've all done. We've all set that Sunday aside and let everyone know this is our one day. Other games and other things can be adjusted, but that is our one day. That
so he's stuck to it. So I decided to schedule most of our fellowship things for Saturday. So you guys can be happy because I planned our church's stuff around you guys.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, when the game used to be on Wednesday, it was on Wednesday for years, and as it went on, it was no problem to get to the game because everyone had blockaded off their Wednesday evening for 4 years. And no one had any expectation that you would be pulled away, again, unless something exploded at work or within the family, which in a business where you get phone calls of crying girlfriends saying that the love of their life is currently being processed into the jail in Clayton can happen.
Yes, that's true. All right. Well, I think we've sort of come to the end of that topic. Now, our main topic that we're going to talk about tonight is GM styles. And Wayne, I know you had mentioned, you had written up some of the points in the topic forum. So I'm going to let you start the ball rolling on this one.
What really got me thinking about this is, like I mentioned, my wife and I have been doing Pathfinder Society. It's something that we're doing together. Well, so far we've done 3 sessions of this, and each time it was a different GM. Each time the GM ran things differently. There's a definite style to it. On our backup Sunday game, John, Chad, and myself have all been switching on and off doing the GMing. We each have a different GM style. And it got me really thinking about, you know, what different GMs bring to the table, what the style is, and just what you're looking to get out of a game. Because sitting down for a GM that may not run things anything like I would normally think I would like, I'm discovering that there is still fun to be had in that game. It may be a different kind of fun than I'm expecting, but as long as I'm open to it, there's something there.
I agree. I think you definitely need to have a fluid idea of how to have fun at a game. I think the worst kinds of players are these backseat driver types that have an extremely strong idea of the kind of game they want to play and won't run it, but will get in and try to force you to run it from the player's position. And I think the opposite of that is what you're talking about, and that's go in and be prepared to share in the other player's story and the GM story. You're absolutely entitled to making your mark on it and turning it in a direction that you find gratifying. But if it's a more rules-like guy, play in a more fast and loose fashion. If it's a more rules-heavy guy, do your paperwork. If it's grimdark, be grimdark. If it's happy and giggly, play a bard that has a frying pan. You know, just play to the strength of what's going on and keep an open mind.
I actually think that this topic kind of ties into the last one, because if you were talking, Wayne, about having backup games.
Yep.
So I almost think that if you're having some sort of a break for whatever reason, if it's just one person or maybe two people, in order to keep things going, understanding you could have that risk of the new shiny, but if you decide to still get together, it's an opportunity for someone else who maybe really wants to GM and hasn't in a while to stretch their GMing legs while you guys are on this hiatus from your main campaign. Yeah. So I kind of think it does tie in, but you know, I know people have different GMing styles, and so some people may not want a GM, but some people may, you know, so I think it's a good opportunity just to mix things up.
And the dinger
bit
is right where I am. It's being the man in the middle. It's the guy who does not want to GM every week for a 2-year campaign, but does want to GM sometimes. So I think, Wayne, I think you're kind of in that boat with me too.
Yeah,
so,
I like playing and I like running. I want to do both.
Yeah, exactly. What we're doing with this pickup rotating campaign is a really good opportunity for you guys to see how I run. me to get my jollies designing an adventure and showing you guys how I run and having a fun time.
So speaking of how you run, John, I know a long time ago, actually when Pat was first coming on the show, you guys were doing all the GM profiles.
Mm-hmm.
How's yours changed since then?
Or has it?
It's definitely developed a little bit. I don't remember exactly what I said back then, but...
That's okay. I don't remember what you said either.
Roughing... Presuming that discussion didn't exist and the question posed to me is, how has my GMing changed in the last 4 years? The answer is basically twofold. I've moved to a more scrupulous and above-the-table adherence of the rules system I'm playing in. I've really learned Pathfinder inside and out, and when we play my game, we're not playing an approximation or fast and loose ad hoc version so that nobody has to do the paperwork. We're playing Pathfinder. I roll above the table. I never use a GM screen. I frequently declare the difficulty class of things before they're made, if it's a binary result DC. I think 5 years ago, I would have been much more willing to nudge dice than I am now. I've gone to a system where I've embraced the challenge of running a game wherein the GM is absolutely beholden to the roll of the dice, and he still has to make it work. That's one direction I've moved. The other direction I've moved is in away from the interplayer conflict a bit. Definitely when Fear the Boot started, I was into playing antagonistic PCs, subtly or overtly. I was into having group templates and group character makeups that did not all get along with each other perfectly or perhaps even at all. I have moved away from that. I have found that repetitive in my own play and frustrating from the GM's chair. I have moved from making that a spoonful of my GMing ingredient to a pinch. So that's my self-diagnosis for how I've changed as a game master since, say, the start of Fear the Boot.
Right, so that wasn't on those. I actually had never GM'd at that point, so I didn't have a GM style then. But I gradually over time, I've kind of developed what I think is at least my style for the moment. And like I've said before, I take from Chad, I take from Chris, I take from anyone I've ever played under. But one of the things I'm finding is very important to me when I run is that me as a GM, I am beholden to the rules as much as the players. I don't like GM fiat when I'm playing.
Yep.
I don't want to say, this guy off screen just shot Pat with an arrow. I want to be able to explain, you know, rule-wise, how did he manage to hit Pat with a 20 AC? Anything I do, I want there to be mechanics behind it. That doesn't mean I'm going to explain, oh, he's casting this, he's using this feat. No, it's all of that's going on behind the scenes in my head and on paper, but I'm beholden to that. This person is not going to do something that they wouldn't be able to do on the sheet. I'm very adamant about that. I've gotten much better about taking what I've prepared and not feeling stuck to it, because the first few times I tried to GM, I had this huge list of stuff and I was watching it too much and I just couldn't let it go and be seat of the pants like Chad does. I've taken a lot of that from Chad.
Well, you don't have to be so seat of your pants that you fall onto the floor.
No, but
you do have to be able to flex.
I was the opposite extreme of that though, where I had everything figured out scene by scene. And when I was looking at that, that was keeping me from running a game.
Yeah. At that point, open up Notepad and write a story.
Exactly.
That's what you're doing there. That's what you're trying to do. You're just doing it really awkwardly with all your friends.
So I am all about player input. I want the players to have as much freedom as possible. I want to be just as beholden to the rule set of whatever game I'm playing as the players. And that's really my style at the moment. Is like I said, I want to be beholden. I want every combat, if possible, to have a social way around it. But there are some things I may throw in there where there's not a way around it just because there's not always a way around it.
Right. And in type of games we're playing, you somewhat frequently face unreasoning foes. Monsters, constructs, whatever the hell. Things you just have to physically dismember to get by them.
Yeah. For some reason, though, it's become very important to me, the fairness aspect. I don't know why that's become important, but I know that about myself having run stuff.
Well, it's important to be subjective
fairness,
to it.
Fairness in what way? In what way do you mean fairness? Fairness to all the players around the table, or fairness in a balance as to what you get out of it and what they
fairness
get out of it?
Fairness to all the players around the table. I don't want to feel like I've just declared something happened because I'm the GM. I like for that to have flown naturally, and I like the players to have as much mm-hmm. input as possible, and I like there to have been a mechanical backing to it.
I could see, like, I don't think I would ever be a GM, but I could see being a GM, it would almost be like performing a service for the other people at the table, that I would want to make sure the end, you know, the major goal and the objective is for them to have the most fun possible. And if it kind of sucks for me a little bit along the way, that's just kind of what goes with the territory. That's how I would see
There's
it.
There's definitely more work that goes with the territory.
Right.
You should be having fun while you're running
it. Right, but the main objective is for more than just you to have fun.
Yes, you are absolutely responsible for the ship sinking or sailing.
Right.
And everyone is to some degree, but the GM is the last.
I think every GM also has their strong points and their weaknesses. I can point to every GM I've played under, and I can think of strong points and weak points for each of them. What I struggle with, and this is one of the topics I wanted to bring up, how do you as a GM tell what your strengths and weaknesses are? It's easier for the player to do that because they're playing under you. But you as the GM, we've already talked before about how sometimes it's hard to get good feedback from the players. How do you as a GM look for your own strengths and weaknesses?
Well, let's talk about that. So since you brought it up here, what would you consider to be your one strength and one weakness as a GM, Wayne?
As for me or just for anyone?
We'll start with yourself and we can move on to others.
Who wants to gossip?
This is going to collide with my advice of praise publicly and criticize privately. But yeah, go ahead and do it to yourself, Wayne. That doesn't matter.
We'll start with the negative because I'm always easier to come up with negative things about myself. I don't think I have quite the timing down yet. That's still something I struggle with, the pacing of the scenes and trying to help keep the scenes moving along. You know, sometimes it'll be dragging at one point or dragging at another, or, you know, here's the plot explosion. Mm-hmm. You got this guy and you're asking him questions and now you know everything. Mm. So I think that's something I still struggle with, is just the pacing of the information that's coming out to the players.
You know, I think calling it a weakness is harsh. I would say, what are some of the things that are challenging, that these are still more challenging to you? I think that's a better way to look at it, because I don't like to look at it in an overtly positive and negative sense. I think if a GM just really sucked, why would you be playing under them?
That's
so I
point.
Think if you're still playing under a GM, it's basically maybe they have a few things that they're still working on, or it's not quite to your liking as a player, but life's not perfect.
Well, but I would almost think if you think a GM really sucks, but you're really good friends with them, wouldn't it be kind of your responsibility to help them become a better GM? You know, Wayne was saying earlier, it's hard to get good feedback. But if you're a GM, like, I wouldn't do it because I would second guess myself. I would be so worried with everyone else's enjoyment, I would no longer have any fun. And they probably wouldn't have fun because they would be like,
paradoxically, you ruin your own fun, you ruin everyone's fun.
It's a tricky thing, though. When it comes to feedback like that, it's a tricky thing because it's so very subjective. You know,
true.
I mean, I could sit here and say that one of the things I excel at as a GM is that I create memorable and enjoyable and engaging NPCs. Because that's my opinion, because I, you know, if I look at myself and self-diagnose, I think I do that pretty well. However, if I'm sitting at a table with my players and we're just having a conversation about things, they might not necessarily view that, because they might think, you know, we meet all these NPCs that have absolutely nothing to do with the course of the action, but we sit and dwell in them and have these conversations with them that mean nothing. Why do you do that? You know, you suck at it. Why don't you move the plot forward a little bit faster? It's so that's, you know, that's their opinion, because maybe their approach to the way they play games is a little bit different. So it is hard to get good feedback, because
Watson agrees.
Exactly, dog.
You know, and the feedback could be rough, because it could be one of those things where, you know, you run a session, I come to you, Chris, and I say, okay, Master Three Balls was a little bit creepy to me and pushed it past my comfort level. And then you get, you know, if that's all a person ever tells you is the negative things, suddenly you're second guessing yourself. You're thinking, man.
Exactly.
And it gets you down the wrong mindset.
But you hit obliquely on a point that I want to hit directly, Wayne, which is when you go to offer constructive criticism of the GM, do it in an IM window or behind a closed door. You can speak frankly one-on-one about things you wish had gone better. And when you are seeking to improve as GM yourself, solicit advice in the same context. I have been party to hundreds of 5 minutes afterwards, so, hey guys, you like the game conversations? They all go exactly the same.
Well, Graham was great. Game was great.
There may be a variation of enthusiasm. If you just had a mind-blowingly cool game, they're going to be more excited than if it sucked. But what Wayne said is game is great. You're going to hear game is great said in one tone of voice or the other. It's like getting a video game review from one of these online gamer press websites my that general advertises rule, for all their places. The scale is 9 to 9.5 to 10.
My general rule for that 5 minutes after the game question is whenever someone says something good, it's maybe a third of actually that's how good it was.
Yeah.
When someone says something is negative, multiply that by 4 or 5.
Well, see, don't
they're
do
trying
this
to
either.
Find a nice way to no, say the negative.
You're just being way in there. You're just beating the hell out of yourself.
What I would...
I think, too, one way in which you can kind of minimize what John is talking about, because he's 100% correct, is if you can get into a one-on-one situation with a player well after the game, and by well after, I mean after you've packed up your stuff and you're like heading out, address something specific and approach it in a way saying, when we were doing this encounter, I was really trying to create this effect, set this mood, make this certain tone. If you point out something specific, that means that they have to respond about that specific thing. I have a nice advantage in that one of the players in my current campaign, he and I ride share, and so we're always walking out to the car together after the session's over with. And so he might start off by just saying, oh yeah, that was really fun tonight. Or I might say, yeah, this scene, I went pretty well, but I was really trying to accomplish something with this and trying to really get this point across. And he's usually pretty good about answering, saying, well, yeah, you did this or something. And he's never really been overly negative. Maybe he's trying to spare my feelings a little bit, but you can address specific things and you may have a better chance of getting some specific answers.
So you don't want to just say, what did you guys think of the game tonight? Well, it was great. You want to ask open-ended questions. If what would you guys have wanted to see differently? Dan did that in the beginning of our Star Trek. And he said, at the end of a couple sessions, he's like, so what are you guys thinking? What's working for you? What's not working for you? And we all spoke up pretty quick. It's like, well, there's just a lot of walking around and doing really nothing. I mean, we're moving plot, but it's like we just seem to be going from one town to a forest. Or I'm sorry, this was for our D&D game. From one town to a forest or this and that. And it was like, we want some combat. We want a little bit more action. And he was like, okay. And so he incorporated. But he did, Chris, just what you're saying, is ask those specific questions and not just leave it superficial.
And I did that after the last game that I had run. I was trying something new. And afterwards, I said, okay, I tried something new I've never done before. I want to get everyone's feedback on that. The game started off with a scene, and then we rolled back time for a week. So we did basically the flash forward we've talked about before on the episode. Because I knew that where the story needed to start linear-wise was a down moment. It was a moment, in a conference room, basically having a conversation. And it's like, I don't want to start the game with that. I want to start the game on a high point and then go back to that. So afterwards, I went around to, okay, I've never done that before. I just want to know, did that work for everyone? Did that do what I was trying to get it to do? And I got unanimous good feedback around the table, positive feedback that, yeah, we see why you wanted to start with that moment. And I felt good about making that decision, because going in, I was agonizing about, is that going to work or is that going to be corny?
The difference between that was brilliant and that was really stupid is thin, because those two have one thing in common, and that is they haven't been tried before.
Yeah.
They're not by the book. You're rolling for a 20 or a 1. You're not rolling 3d6. You're rolling 1d20. The law of averages will not save you. And it's good to ask about specific tricks, specific moments, encounters, issues you may have had with pacing and tone. Whenever Dan comes to me personally to talk about this, he doesn't say, was my game good? He says, I think that last session was slow. What did you think and why? And from there, we talk very concretely about elements of the game rather than the whole game.
I think a GM's strength, I guess what I'm really meaning by this is a good strength for a GM to have is just what you sort of mentioned here, is the ability to take some constructive criticisms, take some inputs, and adapt to some degree to what your players want to see. I agree with the rights of the GM, and that is coming from a player, that yes, it is largely a GM's game.
And I'm not just talking as a GM when I make my Imperius GM statements.
Right,
I believe in the Imperius GM when I'm playing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think overall, you have to recognize as a GM, the ability for you to get your story across is that you have players at the table to hear it.
Every GM has their style. Every GM has what they're good at and what they're not good at. And I think one thing that a group can do badly is the players requesting the GM to do something that the GM's not comfortable with. Using all of us, Chad is a more storytelling GM. Asking Chad to run a game that is number crunchy, rules heavy,
number present,
yeah.
rules existent.
Using battle mats, measuring things out. Basically, that goes against what he wants out of gaming. It goes against what he's good at. That, to me, isn't fair to him as a GM. On the other side of the table, asking, you know, John, for example, to run a game with, you know, no numbers, only a couple rules, everything off the fly. I'm sure you could come up with something, but yeah. that's not what you enjoy doing. Yeah.
That is not playing to my strength.
That would be unfair to you as a GM.
Yeah. And it would be unfair to the people who played it under me because yeah. the game I gave them wouldn't be as good.
And I think that's something to keep in mind when I was talking before about recognizing what a GM's strengths are. Go into the game looking for those strengths, looking for what you're going to enjoy from that game, and don't try to bend your GM to your mold.
So, Wayne, what are different kinds of fun spelled P-H-U-N?
I said I didn't spell it like that. I didn't write it down.
I've never seen that before. It suggested to me to write it down that way.
So, Bluff, your Bluff mod is minus two. Would you please roll dice? I see you got a two. Very good.
Nice.
What I was going for there was I had been approaching games, having been on the podcast, in a certain way. You know, we've had the same type of games. Yes, they've been different genres, different systems, but typically the same type of game. And I thought of, you know, other gaming styles differently. What this Pathfinder Society has really opened up to me is that by sitting down in front of so many different GMs, I have different kinds of fun with different games. In some games, I really am enjoying the fun of the crunch and the measuring and the, you know, the combat for this. I enjoy the fun of a Chad Inception game. You've got the Jenga Tower, and it's a completely different type of game with a different focus. And I think a lot of people, just based on various podcasts I've listened to, talking to people, a lot of people get stuck in a personal rut of, this is the kind of game I like, and this is the only way it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. I think people need to be open to that, especially if you've got multiple GMs in your group, to trying different kinds of games, but don't expect the same thing. If I sit down in front of an Inception game and I expect to have the same kind of fun that I do, you know, a Skies of Glass game or a D&D game or any of those, I'm going to be disappointed because I'm expecting a certain kind of fun.
Exactly.
And there's more than one kind of fun. Just because it's different than what I am doing and enjoying doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. It's all still good fun.
Wayne, I absolutely agree with that. I strongly believe that a good variety in gaming is extremely important to try to achieve, to be exposed to a variety of different games, if nothing else, just for the experience of it, I think is a very good thing to maintain a sort of a healthy gaming culture. Like you're saying, if you get in a rut or you only play the same thing over and over again, I think you're just limiting yourself and to the possibility of finding something that's just completely wonderful. And I also think that exposure to a variety of things, it will allow you to expand your repertoire, you know, of playing styles and anything else. It can do nothing but help, I think. That's my opinion.
You've got to work those other gaming muscles, otherwise you're just going to atrophy. Yeah. I mean, you essentially get the gamer equivalent of carpal tunnel if you continue to do the same thing over and over again.
I like that. Every GM I sit in front of, I will blatantly steal something from you if I like it.
Absolutely.
I don't necessarily mean the stories or anything. This
is a storytelling folk culture thing we're doing here. You have to steal. It's nothing but the sum total of stealing and rearranging the stolen. And I'm okay with that.
All right, Chris, we went over how John's styles changed over time, and we went over that I actually have a style now and that Pat still doesn't GM. So has your style changed at all over the course of the time you've been on the podcast?
I would say yes, to a certain degree. I think my style has changed over time in a more glacial sense.
Since you've been alive since the glaciers were forming North America.
We were all telling jokes about you being old at the same time.
I just can't believe you actually used the word glacial.
Well, you know, it was funny because when I was listening to John describe himself and then Wayne describe himself, I was honestly sitting there thinking to myself, how has my style changed? What do I really do that's different? I was referencing back to, you know, campaigns and things that I've run, and there are large gaps of time in there. And so it has been a very slow evolution as far as I think that I'm less rules oriented now than I used to be. And I think at the same time, I think I've also changed in the sense that my desire for a cohesive beginning, middle, and end storyline really is more predominant now. And it would be hard for me to see that changing in any time in the near future because I have come to enjoy that. And I guess what I mean by that is, as compared to my very early career GMing, it was more episodic in a sense where, yeah, we all had the same characters. We all just kind of did a bunch of random adventures and went around and did stuff. There was never really any overarching storyline. But then as time went on, I really liked the idea of, you know, moving to something that had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I prefer that now because to me it seems more real, it seems more complete. It certainly leaves a possibility for sequels or anything like that that you may want to do. But I've become less attached to hard and specific rules. And I'm not sure really where it came about. I think maybe it came, you know, as John said, he's become, you know, thoroughly ingratiated in learning Pathfinder. I think that when 3.0 and 3.5 came about, there was so much stuff that kind of locked you into a lot of those rules that it in a certain sense, it kind of turned me off because I like the ability to be flexible and not always have to be stuck with the numerical result that you were given because of your skill plus your dice roll. So I've kind of found myself leaning more towards systems that, or enjoying systems more that cater to that.
But yeah, there's definitely systems where conflict and random event resolution is done by shifting control of narrative rather than a difficulty class and a DC 20. And those are fun and those are different.
And that said, there's not anything wrong with having, you know, hard and fast rules results. You know, that is also kind of fun because, you know, the person who likes to play war games, even though I'm crappy at it, I like that. You know, it's nice. Okay, I just need a 7 or better and this thing's dead.
Yeah,
great.
Yeah.
You know, I enjoy
that.
And for
a tactical adventure game, that's perfect. For
Absolutely.
A game where you're sitting around being vampires, scheming all day without necessarily killing anything and taking its stuff, that's really crappy because you can't survive. You can't resolve things on yes/no rolls about whether you hit something. So you use a more narrative
right.
system.
One last thing to add in there, as far as my style goes, I've also become a bit more into details and minutia, I guess, when it comes down to certain things. And I think that's because, and this, I don't want to get back into the whole immersion topic, but that's something that for me it adds to creating that overall story and creating something that, in the players' minds and in my own, seems real.
I would say you've probably also grown a little bit of a thicker skin just knowing us.
You'd have to with all the abuse. Yeah,
the amount of abuse that comes from being part of Fear the Boot, yes.
I haven't because I was spit straight out of all-male school into the gaming culture of this group, but yeah, you guys definitely have.
Alrighty, well, I think that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode. Again, go out there and look at Con Planner, Fear the Con 5 coming up in May, and we'll catch you next week.
Yeah, we have characters to go make for our online game. So, Pat, you get started writing John's background form.
Yeah.
Boy, that's not going to happen again.
See ya.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2012. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.